The village had a small grocer's shop, painted a pretty pale blue. A woman said a curt hello as she went in, the bell dinging overhead. Although the shop was tiny, it appeared to sell absolutely everything. Nina looked at the paper-wrapped lamb chops. They were marked Lennox Farm. Back in Birmingham, meat generally came from the supermarket, encased in plastic. This was kind of new. There was chicken, too. She thought of the jolly little hen scratching outside her new window. Of course, it was having a much better life than any chicken she normally bought, she told herself. Even so, she found herself choosing some cauliflower to make cauliflower cheese instead. There was also a plethora of local cheeses she'd never seen before. The woman noticed her looking. "Do you need any help?" she said. "I know it's a bit confusing." "I'm new here," said Nina, smiling. "Oh, I know that," said the woman. "I'm Leslie. You bought Woolley's van for some crazy reason, and you can't drive it, and you've moved into Lennox's mystery palace." She gave a rather pleased-with-herself smile. She was small and neat, with weather-beaten cheeks and a tight look about her face. "Mystery palace?" said Nina. "Oh, yes. Nobody's seen that place since Kate left. What's it like? I heard she spent a fortune, got people up from Edinburgh. Even Inverness wasn't good enough." "Right," said Nina. "Well?" Leslie folded her arms. Obviously, gossip was something you paid for, together with whatever you were actually buying. "It's very nice," said Nina. "Kind of all glass at the front, with a little balcony for sleeping, and a good view." Leslie sighed. "Oh, that sounds nice. Is it insulated?" "I didn't ask." Leslie stared at her. "You rented a house without finding out if it was insulated. You can tell you're foreign." Nina had never thought of herself as foreign before. "There's a wood-burning stove," she said hopefully. Leslie looked at her. "Okay, then," and she laughed in a way that made Nina feel slightly uncomfortable. Nina picked out as many scrubbing and cleaning products as she could carry. "What's all that for?" She had absolutely vowed to support the local shop and the people who worked in the area, but found she was quickly going off the idea. "It's for the van." "What are you going to do with a van, anyway? You don't look as though you could do house removals." "Actually," began Nina, feeling timid and trying to force herself to speak a little louder. This was her life now. She was going to have to own it, even though she felt as you often do when you've had to do absolutely everything by yourself, rather like a grumpy child. She took a breath. "Actually, I'm going to run a mobile bookshop. Go around to the towns where they don't have one, like here." Leslie's eyebrows lifted. "Really?" "Yes," said Nina, glancing round anxiously just in case Leslie was already hiding a full bookshop in the back of the little blue shop and wouldn't appreciate her competition in the slightest. "Have you got the new E.L. James?" "I'm afraid not," said Nina apologetically, "but I can get it. Also, I have something I think you might like even more." Leslie looked suspicious.
"I doubt it."
"You should trust me on this."
"I know what I like," said the woman.
Nina looked down and fumbled in her wallet.
"Well, hopefully see you down there anyway."
Outside, she found a cluster of people around the van who peered inside as she unlocked the back. The books were still in their boxes on the floor, but people reached out their hands to pick them up and look at them.
"Hi, everyone," said Nina shyly, her own hands full of cleaning bottles. "Is this the new library?" said an older woman with a pull-along trolley. "We need a new library."
Lots of other old ladies nodded approvingly.
"I'm afraid not," said Nina. "It's going to be a shop."
"It's a van."
"I know. A bookshop in a van."
"I miss that library."
"So do I."
Nina winced.
"Well, once we're ready, we'll have lots of lovely books for you."
A young woman with a buggy stopped beside the van.
"Hello, are you selling books?" she said cheerfully. "Got any for children?"
"Of course," said Nina, leaning into the buggy. "Hello there."
"This is Angus," said the woman. She squinted. "I know you're meant to read to them, but he gets really bored and wobbles off or tries to bite something, mostly the biting thing.
Angus grinned, showing gummy teeth.
All our books are ripped to shreds, the mother went on. Someone asked me if we had a dog, and I nearly said yes.
Have you tried cloth books?
Yes, she said glumly. He actually swallowed those ones. So we're back to board. At least they've got some fibre.
Nina smiled.
Hang on, she said. Someone else had exactly that problem.
She hopped up into the van and came out with a near-pristine copy of Don't Bite Me. It was an incredibly successful board book about various animals with teeth that encouraged children to point at their own teeth rather than use them.
What's that? Well, it's got a lot of pointing. Maybe if he's pointing at it, he won't bite it so much.
Or he'll bite his own finger, said the woman hopefully.
Good training.
Thanks. I'll take it. I'm Moira, by the way.
Nice to meet you, Moira and Angus, said Nina, realising that she would have to get prices marked up in the front of the books. And also your invisible dog. Moira paid her, looking cheerful as she handed the book to Angus, who stuffed it in his mouth hungrily.
Maybe keep it in your bag till you can practice the pointing, suggested Nina.
She watched Moira go, smiling. Then, as if the floodgates had opened, sold her entire stock of Georgette Heyer and Nora Lofts to a cluster of old ladies who buzzed around her, still complaining about how awful it was that the library had gone. By the time she'd driven back to the barn to make cauliflower cheese, swiftly followed by a reminder to herself that until either she'd got a separate kitchen or it was warm enough to have all the doors and windows open, she shouldn't cook cauliflower again, and start scrubbing the van, she realised she'd have to figure out some way of getting the rest of the books up here, and sharpish, because this might just work. Nina turned round and looked out of the window of the barn the following day, over the fields where moorhens and even the occasional kestrel were swooping down. The place was full of birds, and there was just so much sky. A grey bank of clouds was hanging over the sea, approaching fast, racing one another. A piercing shaft of sunlight pushed in between them. There was rain, far away, the mist coming off it, as some other farmer's field was watered, and the faintest pink line on the horizon, later in the evening, illuminating the end of the multicoloured fields. Every time she crested the top of Kirin Hill, she saw the shining fields of rapeseed pop up, almost too bright a yellow against the blue patches of sky. It felt like weather was being made in front of her eyes, the sky a huge screen of flowing and whirling movement, which meant you generally needed an extra jumper, she realised, and a jacket. But it was worth it. It was time to drive over the level crossing again. Sarinda had been very clear about this during their final wine-fuelled chat. She needed to conquer her fears and get on with everything anew. She'd had a shock, but she couldn't let it beat her. But also, Nina was curious, no more than that, she told herself, as to whether Marek and Jim had picked up her bag from the tree. It was a daft idea, and she shouldn't dwell on it. Anyone could have taken it, and they shouldn't be leaning out of trains anyway. She'd caused enough damage. Nonetheless, she slowed down carefully and parked in the lay-by just before the crossing. The bag was gone, but that didn't mean anything. There was, however, she noticed suddenly, another bag there, hanging quite far out on a branch, bright yellow. Smiling to herself, she shinned up the side of the tree, remembering those days of hiding in the apple tree to read in peace. She inched her way up the trunk until she could grab a lower bough, then lightly raised herself and crawled towards the bag. As she got closer, she could see that it very clearly said Nina in big square letters. She leaned over with excitement blooming in her chest and untied it. Inside was a little book of poetry, in Russian and English, by a writer Nina had never heard of called Fyodor Tyutchev. She smiled in delight. It was an old cloth hardback, evidently well worn. There was no inscription. Tucked into the front of it was a little note from Jim that said gruffly, "Hope you're okay after everything. Sorry again, I shouted. Got a fright. Marek says maybe we can make it up to ye by bringing some stuff up. Let us know." And underneath, an email address. Suddenly, the sun came out from behind a fast-moving cloud and hit the tree trunk dead on. The warmth felt absolutely glorious on Nina's back. She wriggled backwards with the book and got comfortable against the tree trunk. She was an expert at getting comfortable in trees. Then began to read. Be silent. Hide away. And let your thoughts and longings rise and set in the deep places of your heart. Let dreams move silently as stars, in wonder more than you can tell. Let them fulfill you, and be still. She looked at the first poem for a long time, idly rubbing a leaf between her fingers. How very strange that someone she had met so briefly, under such extraordinary circumstances, should turn out to be able to pinpoint exactly what she was feeling, and how. Or rather, take what she was feeling and make her feel so very much better about it. The verse in the original Russian looked equally beguiling, if completely incomprehensible. She read the poem again, feeling herself sinking slightly in the warm, cozy haven of the great oak tree. She warned herself not to fall asleep and topple off, but it was so quiet. Merely the hum of the bees in the bluebells below, the occasional call of a tern high above the trees, and she felt the most remarkable sense of inner peace. Honk! The sound of a car horn startled Nina, and very nearly did make her topple off the branch. Honk! Below her was a big, arrogant-looking Land Rover, taking up more than half the road. She'd left enough space for it to get through, hadn't she? So what was the problem? It's fine! She yelled down, to no avail. The Land Rover honked again. Furious now, Nina was tempted to throw something down on top of it. An acorn, perhaps, although it wasn't the right season. The bird stuttered and flew away at the ugly noise of the horn, the utter peace and calm of the setting disrupted because some stupid driver thought she might clip their expensive wing mirror. She shinned down, crossly. It's fine, she repeated loudly to the open window. Just drive past it. It's not that big. The face greeting her was stern. Well, firstly, it is that big. It's huge. Nina realized belatedly that it was Lennox the farmer, her new landlord, in the Land Rover, which paradoxically made her angrier. This was his countryside, after all. Why was he determined to ruin it? And secondly, that branch you were so languidly relaxing on is actually rotten right through. Couldn't you see? Nina glanced upwards to where there were flaking bits of bark and green spores blooming in the bare wood beneath the branch. It's dying, said Lennox, his face still set. Oh, she said, I didn't realize. Obviously, sniffed Lennox. If you fall off that and land on the railway line again, you get special marks for carelessness. What the hell were you doing up there anyway? Nina shrugged and held the book close. No reason, she said. I mean, there's no shortage of trees. Well, maybe this was just the one I liked. There was a short silence, and Lennox looked awkward. He rubbed the back of his neck with his hand. So, you're settling in all right? Nina looked down at the book in her hand. Oh, she said awkwardly. I should be working harder. I mean, I can afford my rent. Oh, that's not what I meant, said Lennox, going pink at the tops of his ears. I heard the women in the village are getting all a flutter about you coming. It's just me that thinks it's a stupid idea.
Do you think reading is only for girls, then? Said Nina, still cross. You know, women find men who read really frightfully attractive.
She instantly worried that she'd gone too far, as he got out of the Land Rover and stood beside her, not looking at her. Then he heaved a sigh and clicked his fingers. Instantly, a black-and-white dog leapt out of the back of the Land Rover and whizzed to his side, and he put his hand down and automatically caressed its ears. Nina found herself thinking how useful that would be to have an automatic comforting device. The dog looked nice.
Do they? Said Lennox gruffly.
I like your dog, said Nina. He's very cute.
The dog wandered up to her and sniffed her hand.
And clever, she said. Oh, you're a lovely boy, aren't you? You're a lovely boy.
He's a working dog, said Lennox shortly. "He isn't a lovely boy, and he and I have to get back to work."
Nina watched the Land Rover take off, mud splattering from under its tires as it made its way into the distance. She sighed. Pissing off her landlord hadn't exactly been top of her to-do list. She glanced back down at the book and the scrap of paper she was still holding. On the other hand, the day had hardly been a write-off. As she drove back to the farm, she sank into a reverie. The handsome, sad-eyed foreign gentleman with the deeply romantic heart racing through the night on a dashing charger. Well, a big train. She knew she shouldn't think this way, but she couldn't help it. It was just how she was built. And now she had an email address she could actually read.
Chapter 13. It was exciting staying up until midnight to go and meet the night train. Jim had pointed out in an email several times that what they were doing was completely against regulations, and also illegal to boot, so she couldn't tell anyone about it, and she had promised faithfully, feeling rather thrillingly that she was inside a spy novel as she did so. She was to be at the level crossing at 12:10 precisely. Jim was going to drive too fast, which he never did, he had said solemnly, to begin with, then tell signal control that they needed to stop to delay the timetable, but she would have to be quick. Feeling the part, Nina dressed entirely in black, including a high scarf, and tweeted a picture of herself to Sarinda, feeling slightly regretful that her friend wasn't there to share the adventure. Sarinda didn't even get back to her, which she found rather hurtful. Plus, Griffin's Facebook had been absolutely chock-full of what a jolly time he was having at his amazing new media centre. Nina wasn't sure whether this was actually true, or in fact meant that his new bosses monitored all his social media accounts, so it was pretty difficult to figure out what he was trying to say. And her other friends said hi, of course, but that was about their limit. Everyone was busy, she told herself. Everyone's life went on. And this was definitely something new. She marched to the door and turned out the lights. In the farmhouse, which she could see down the slope, a lamp was still burning. Nina didn't think farmers stayed up late in general. Perhaps Lennox was the exception. Maybe that was why he was so grumpy all the time. Maybe he was looking through his wedding album, getting maudlin with a glass of whiskey. A shot of pity went through her. She didn't want to think of him like that. Think of anyone like that. It was hard. She crept past the farmhouse quietly, even though, of course, as soon as she started the van, it made enough noise to wake the dead. As she pulled up at the now familiar level crossing and turned off the van's headlights, she felt like the only human being for miles around. Then, realizing that she was the only human being for miles around, she pulled up her scarf and stepped out of the vehicle. It was cold outside. Owls hooted in the trees, the flapping of wings merging with the noise of the leaves rustling in the wind. Oddly, even though it was right in the middle of the night, it didn't feel quite black. The moon and stars were bright against the patchwork landscape, in a way they never could be in the city sky, with its fiercely delineated halogen lights. The chill air caught sharply in her throat, and the world felt very strange. Suddenly, from far off, she heard it. A tremble, then the slight rattling of wheels on the rails, slowing down. Then, coming round the bend, a shockingly bright light. It gave her a quick, unnerving flashback to being trapped, and she found herself glancing instinctively back at the van to make sure it was still there, safely on the other side of the barrier. The train was huge in the night. Utterly vast and dark, a great metal dragon. No wonder people used to be so scared of them. It slowed and slowed, but still made a dark and sinister outline against the grey fields, until a light went on in the cabin, and she saw Jim's cheery face, someone else by his side. Down beside the track, she heard footsteps, and she wondered who the second person in the cabin was, for there, suddenly, was Marek, beaming, his white teeth visible above his stubble in the headlamp of the train. She flushed at the sight of him, as she always did,
when, as so often, she had excitedly built up a book-fueled idea of someone in her head, someone who would match up to her romantic fantasies. She felt foolish immediately, but his smile was genuine. He was truly pleased to see her, and his curly black hair still fell over his heavy-lidded eyes.
"Come," he said. "Come, unpack."
Nina grinned so widely it almost split her face.
"I will."
"And,"
he shouted, excited, moving more quickly,
"come see."
Jim jumped down from the front of the train.
"Hurry up, hurry up," he said. "We can't dawdle. The sleeper will have our goods for garters."
"The sleeper stopped too early anyway," grumbled Marek. "They should be pleased of a few more minutes in their beds. And also, look."
Behind Jim, the figure Nina had glimpsed in the cab jumped down. To her amazement, it was none other than Sarinda.
"Soz!"
she screamed, running to her friend and flinging her arms around her.
"You're here! Why are you here? I've missed you so much."
Sarinda grinned. It was Marek's idea when they came to pick up the books. "By the way, can you let me know how you managed to persuade these two gigantic hunks to do all your dirty work for you?" "It's Scotland's newfound proud confidence as a nation," said Nina, amazed by how delighted she was, even after just a week, to see a friendly face. Or rather, it seemed, three friendly faces. She realized suddenly that despite all the new exciting feelings of autonomy, of freedom, that she'd felt since she arrived, she'd been missing the simple familiarity that came with, well, someone you understood, she supposed.
"Come on," said Marek. "Move."
They all scurried to the first truck, and Jim loosened the pegs, first glancing round furtively. Fortunately, there wasn't a soul in sight. Underneath the tarpaulin were what Nina knew were over 70 boxes of books. She eyed them guiltily.
"I had no idea there were that many," she lied.
"Really?" said Sarinda, hoisting two at once. "No, how could you have done, with only all the many, many warnings from me to move the damn things?" Nina felt awful. "I must have been the worst housemate in the world." Sarinda rolled her eyes. "Actually, I moved someone else in too fast. She cries in the bath a lot. Then when I ask her if she's all right, she says, 'I'm fine, but why are all these books in here?'" Nina frowned.
"That sounds awful," she said. "She's probably depressed. I have a couple of excellent books I could recommend."
Sarinda dumped the boxes in the back of the van. "Okay," she said. "I'll pay you on the way out."
"No, you won't," said Nina, as the two men lifted large boxes off the truck. "Oh, I am so thrilled to see you. How did you meet up with them?"
"Flew to Inverness and hitched a lift. It was quite exciting, actually. And I have a clutch of annual leave left over. The office can fall apart, which it will. I need a break from that place." Sarinda watched Marek bend over and load a large pile of boxes effortlessly and tidily into the van.
"Good view here, though," she said.
"Sarinda?"
said Nina, shocked. She'd had more romantic thoughts. Sarinda looked at her.
"Come on, don't say you hadn't noticed," she said slyly.
Nina thought of the poem suddenly and caught herself blushing.
"Don't be daft," she said. "He's a very nice man doing us both a favour."
"It's a hell of a favour, risking their jobs," Sarinda glanced back.
"Do you think he looks a bit like Mark Ruffalo?"
"Stop it!
I'm just asking.
Do I think a Latvian train driver looks like Mark Ruffalo?"
"A little bit."
"Hey, you two, hurry up, huh? I do not want to get sacked for deeply illegal move on British Railways."
The girls straightened up and giggled.
"Also, I have tea,"
added Jim helpfully, holding up his flask.
"So, unload the boxes before it gets cold."
They scurried back to the train to fetch more books.
"Is there not loads of this going on?"
Nina asked suddenly, as the thought occurred to her.
"Lots of illegal, naughty things travelling up and down the railway. Smuggling and stuff."
Jim and Marek smiled.
"Not with us," said Jim. "I've seen what drugs have done to the place I grew up in. Won't have nothing to do with anything like that. No way. This is different.
Marek frowned.
"You know, he said. When my parents were little, books were banned in my language. That is why, alas, I read in Russian first, and then in the beautiful music of my homeland. So, anything that spreads books and brings about more books, I would say it is good. Good medicine, not bad. They sat on the stoop, talking about books in the moonlight, passing around the hot, very sweet tea, and Nina could easily have stayed there until the dawn. But there was a telephone sound in the cab, and simultaneously a loud honk from behind them somewhere. The impatient sleeper, Nina deduced, and it was time for the boys to go. Jim hopped into the cabin and fired up the engine, which made a deep, throbbing sound that shook the ground. Sarinda declared herself absolutely bloody freezing, and went and sat in the van to warm herself up. Then Marek jumped lightly onto the plate, and Nina smiled up at him. "I can't thank you enough," she said. "You can," he said gently. "Leave me book every now and again, whenever you think of us." "I shall think of you every day," said Nina, colouring a little. "Well, every day it shall also be good," said Marek, blushing slightly too. "I liked your book of poems," said Nina. "I liked it very much." "Poetry is good for people who are in strange lands," said Marek. "Yes," said Nina. "Yes, it is." The train gave out a long honk, and then slowly, gracefully began to move away beneath the starry sky. Nina turned round and saw that Sarinda, obviously exhausted from her long day, had curled up in the front of the van and fallen fast asleep. Nina herself stayed by the track, as the noise from the train faded away, followed in short order by the long and beautiful burgundy and navy blue sleeper, with its busy bar full of strangers meeting and passing by, its hard recliner seats where the cash-strapped and the shift-workers tried to get some shut-eye, and the mysterious, dimly lit windows of the first-class compartments. As the train slowed, then slid smoothly through the level crossing, nobody aboard was the least bit aware of a girl standing alone in the dark, staring straight ahead. And then, at last, the track stopped humming, and all was silence once again. And the wide, dark Highland Valley belonged once more to the owls, and the scurrying squirrels, and the gentle deer, and the wind rustling in the branches, and the bright moon overhead, and the sense of a world completely and utterly at peace. And Nina, even though she felt chilled, also felt profoundly touched and grateful for her good fortune, and she could not have said how long it had been since she had felt that way. Chapter 14 Sarinda slept all the way back to the farm, waking briefly as they went into the barn, to squeak, "Seriously? You get this? It's all yours. There's nobody in the bath or anything. How is this fair?" Then immediately falling on the sofa and passing out again. Nina, however, felt wide awake, even though it was well after 1 o'clock in the morning. She looked out of the small back window and noticed the light still on over in the farmhouse. Someone else wasn't sleeping. As she watched, she saw another light come on, and another. Then the door banged hard as Lennox stalked out of the house. He appeared to be swearing. Nina jumped up. She pulled her coat and wellies back on and slipped out of the door. "Jesus Christ!" She hadn't meant to creep up on Lennox as quietly as she did and scare him out of his wits, but it was too late. He whirled round as if she was holding a spade poised to whack him on the head. "Sorry! Sorry! What the hell are you doing out here? It's the middle of the bloody night!" I know, I'm sorry. I wondered what you were doing." "What the ruddy hell do you think I'm doing?" Nina thought this might be a rhetorical question, because she absolutely didn't have a clue. "I don't know. I thought maybe you might have heard an intruder."
"I did," said Lennox shortly. "It turned out to be you."
"Oh," said Nina.
Lennox sighed. "You're a townie, aren't you? What do you think? That farming is a 9-to-5 job? Well, it's not. If you must know, Rory thinks we've a lambing gone wrong in the upper field. and I'm going to check it out and see if we need to call Kyle out. He's the vet. Vets are like doctors for sick animals.
Yeah, yeah, all right. I've got it, said Nina.
Lennox had stopped by the Land Rover. Are you still here? He said. Nina didn't know what to say, but she felt emboldened by her night's adventure and not at all ready for sleep. She simply shrugged. Lennox paused. Do you want to come? We might be able to use a small pair of hands.
Sure,
she found herself saying, barely able to recognize herself. As she jumped into the Land Rover, she was surprised, but then not really surprised, to find the dog in there too. He licked her hand.
What's your doggy's name?
Lennox looked appalled.
He's a dog, not a doggy.
He's a professional working farm dog. Very valuable, too.
So does he have a name or just a barcode?
Lennox's hand strayed to the dog's head, as it often did, seemingly unconsciously. Parsley. This was so unexpected. She had assumed it would be Bob or Rex or something equally to the point, that Nina grinned.
Hello, Parsley, she said. What a lovely name.
Parsley snuffled a little and licked her hand.
It's a silly name, said Lennox.
Well, I think it's lovely, said Nina. A lovely name for a lovely doggy. Dog, I mean.
For once, as the Land Rover bumped over the muddy track up the hill, Nina didn't care about saying the wrong thing, didn't feel embarrassed. There was something quite liberating in Lennox being so rude. She could tell he was like this with everyone, and it gave her license to be slightly bolder than she might have been otherwise. She turned in her seat to look at him. He had a solid jaw, blue eyes creased from squinting across the fields, a strong nose and chin, a sprinkling of wiry stubble across his cheeks, and thick hair poking out from under his cap. He didn't look like a man who had ever been inside. Even the car seemed too confining for him. He was made to stride across the moors on long legs, the wind behind him. There wasn't a soft edge to him anywhere. He was all lean angles. Suddenly, seemingly in the middle of nowhere, there wasn't a light to be seen, Lennox stopped the Land Rover. He got a hurricane light from the back seat and turned it up to full.
"Rory?"
he whispered into the night.
"Aye, here, boss," came a voice behind him. "Where are ye?" "In the lean-to. She's no having a good time in there. Twins by the feel of it. It's like a jigsaw puzzle."
Lennox swore and strode forwards, Nina stumbling behind him. "Did you call Kyle?"
"Aye. He's at a carving the other side of the brae."
"Well, that's terrific," said Lennox, putting down his lantern. The lean-to, attached to the side of a barn, wasn't cosy, but it was out of the full force of the wind, which made a lot of difference. A ewe was lying on her side, looking very distressed, bleating pitifully. I know, old girl," he said. It was the first time Nina had heard anything like softness in his voice. "There, there." There was a large jar of a Vaseline-style concoction on the floor, and Lennox started rolling up his sleeves and scrubbing up in a bucket. Suddenly, Nina got a massive James Herriot flashback.
"You're not," she said nervously. "You're not going to stick your arm up that animal's fanny. This isn't all creatures great and small."
The carrot-topped Rory shot a glance in Nina's direction.
"Don't mind her," said Lennox. "What is she? Work experience?" said Rory,
in an accent Nina could barely understand. Then he said something else in Gaelic that she 100% absolutely couldn't understand, but it made Lennox laugh, which Nina thought was profoundly unfair in the circumstances. Lennox shook his head.
"Nah, let's have a shot at it."
Rory held the ewe's legs to stop her struggling, and Nina found she couldn't help but look away as Lennox stuck his arm inside the animal.
"Oh, for goodness sake,"
said Lennox, cross but amused by her reaction.
"Honestly, there's being a townie, and there's living in complete and utter denial. Do you want this ewe to have her lambs or not?"
"I know," said Nina. "I've just never seen anything like it before."
"Won't get this in your books," he teased.
Then he frowned.
"Ah, I can't grip it. My damn hands are too big." "Come on,"
Come on, little one. The sheep bleated painfully again.
I know, sorry, said Lennox, wrestling around.
Damn it.
What about you? He said to Rory.
Mine are the same, said the younger man, showing his large, rough hands.
Couldn't he get my hand and the legs out at the same time?
No, I know.
There was a pause. Then Lennox fixed Nina with a look.
I was going to see if you could help us, but you seem far too squeamish for all of this.
Nina swallowed. She had read plenty of animal stories, not from preference, but simply because she had read nearly everything as a child. Calligraphy, code-breaking, ventriloquism. There was absolutely nothing in the little children's library she hadn't devoured, nothing she'd missed at all. But as for dealing with real animals, in the wild, that was something she hadn't considered. She'd never got closer to a lamb than eating one on Easter Sunday, or briefly looking up from her book whilst passing a field of them on a train. This big, smelly, panicking creature in front of her, this was something different altogether, and she wasn't at all sure how to cope with it. She nervously advanced a little bit. She felt Lennox's eyes on her, and realized he totally expected her not to be able to cope. This steeled her a little. He already thought she was a useless townie. She wasn't going to confirm his suspicion.
I could have a shot, she said carefully.
Lennox's eyebrow moved ever so slightly.
Are you sure?
Could I make things worse?
Maybe.
Any news from Kyle?
Rory looked up from his phone.
Still at the carving.
Lennox sighed in exasperation, then looked at Nina again.
He said. Do you want me to have a shot or don't you? Said Nina, cross and anxious.
Well, that sheep is worth a bit more than you, that's all, said Lennox.
The ewe gave a noise of keening pain that made them all wince.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Get in there, he said, and knelt by the animal's side.
And try not to make things worse.
Nina washed thoroughly in a basin of soapy water, then lathered up her hands with the Vaseline and tried to get used to the smell. Then, tentatively, she touched the sheep.
Lennox laughed. It's only a sheep. It's not going to bite you.
There's a live animal in there, pointed out Nina. It totally might bite me.
Well, it won't be alive for much longer if you don't get a move on, said Lennox, as the poor sheep strained and twisted in distress.
Nina took a deep breath and plunged her hand in. She was left-handed, so Lennox jumped up and came around her other side.
Right, he said. What can you feel?
A whole load of squidge, said Nina, panicking slightly.
She could feel her hand and arm getting crushed.
I can't...
Okay, okay. Just relax. Get used to it. It's not every day you stick your hand up a sheep.
It isn't, agreed Nina.
Try shutting your eyes, suggested Lennox. You'll feel more of what you're looking for that way.
Nina closed her eyes briefly, and it made a lot of difference. Under her fingers, the baby sheep started to become clear. A little nose, ears, and a great tangle of legs.
He's all mixed up, she said. He's got too many legs. Oh, no.
Okay, said Lennox, his mouth twitching.
Why has he got too many legs?
Nina was becoming slightly hysterical. It felt like some kind of alien spider being.
Well, let's just assume for a moment that there's more than one lamb in there.
Oh, yes, said Nina, relieved. Twins, of course, you said. That makes more sense.
Rory snorted in the corner, and Lennox shot him a look. He went off to fetch some fresh water, still looking very sceptical.
No, said Lennox. I need you to get four legs together that belong to the same animal. Do you understand?
Nina nodded. She could feel them now, all mixed up like a jigsaw puzzle, as Rory had said. And quickly and carefully she set about unfolding the legs from under each lamb, until, triumphantly, she had four hooves in one hand. It felt oddly like changing a duvet.
I've got one, she said.
That's great, said Lennox. Now, pull it a little. Gently.
Not too much. The little animal moved forward, then stopped.
It's stuck, said Nina, as the sheep gave another great wail of distress. It's stuck. I can't get him any more.
Don't worry, said Lennox, pulling out a piece of rope. Here, get your hand out, and then loop this round the hoofs.
Nina stared at him. You're going to pull out a lamb with a rope?
Unless you'd rather perform a caesarean section, grunted Lennox, speedily tying a slipknot and passing her the rope. Her hands were absolutely disgusting now, and although it was horribly warm inside the sheep, it was still completely freezing in the lean-to, and she'd had to take her jacket off and roll her sleeves up, which she wasn't enjoying in the slightest. She was trembling slightly as she took the rope and put her hand back inside the ewe, but after a few false starts, she managed somehow to get it around the hooves.
"Okay," said Lennox. "Are you ready?
Because I'm going to pull, but if it's not ready, we'll have to start all over again."
"Farming is very different to how I thought it was," said Nina, looking anxiously at the coiled rope in Lennox's hands.
"There are things you can't read about in books, you know," grunted Lennox. "Are we ready or not?"
"Please do it now," said Nina. "I'm freezing to death."
"Okay," said Lennox. "One, two, three." Nina removed her hand. Then, gently, without straining or tugging, Lennox pulled on the rope just so. Slowly at first, then faster, and suddenly out plopped a blinking, brand-new, soaking-wet little lamb.
"Oh!" said Nina. "Oh, my goodness!"
Lennox looked at her with narrowed eyes.
"What on earth did you think was going to come out?" he said.
"Something shrink-wrapped at the co-op?" And then, with a happy surge, the sheep heaved strongly, and the second little lamb came rushing out onto the hay, and looked up and around with a blind-eyed, confused stare, and Nina gasped.
"Oh, wow!"
Nina scrubbed her hands clean as Lennox rubbed the new lambs down with fresh hay, checking their mouths and nostrils, and the mother delivered the afterbirth. Then, astonishingly, as if they hadn't been through a great traumatic entrance to the world, the tiny creatures found their wobbly feet and stumbled up blindly, making little bleating noises. They were utterly and hopelessly enchanting, and Nina couldn't take her eyes off them.
"Oh, my goodness," she said. "Look at them. That's amazing. That's amazing."
She gazed, fascinated, as the newborn lambs somehow, instinctively, made their way to their mother, who was now lying exhausted on her side, and found exactly the place to go to start sucking milk. She found, to her amazement, that she was rather tearful. The ewe, who had been in such awful pain, then utterly exhausted, somehow recovered herself enough to sit up in a rather ungainly fashion and start licking clean her new babies.
"Well done, you," said Nina. "Well done, Mum."
Lennox smiled.
"I don't care if you're laughing at me," said Nina. "This is totally awesome, actually."
"I'm not laughing at you," said Lennox. "I'm agreeing with you. Just because I see a lot of lambs being born doesn't mean I don't think it's pretty incredible. Every time. Lovely little buggers they are, too."
He petted them roughly.
"Come on," he said. "Tea."
When Nina stood up, she realized she was still frozen to the bone. Outside, she was amazed to see the first rays of dawn in the corner of the sky.
"We weren't in there for that long," she said. "Were we?"
Lennox nodded.
"Aye. It was a pretty gnarly one. It's gone 3.
"It's just after 3 and getting light," said Nina. "This is ridiculous. You basically live above the Arctic Circle. It's the land of the midnight sun."
Down at the farmhouse, the log burner had been banked and was smouldering happily. The room was cosy, and Lennox stoked the fire and went to boil the kettle for tea. Nina took the opportunity to wash up more thoroughly, even though she was resigning herself to the fact that she would obviously smell of sheep forever. She was intrigued by the farmhouse bathroom.
It was absolutely cutting-edge, brand-new, all polished marble and walk-in showers and jacuzzi baths. It was like a really, really posh hotel, with thick white towels hanging everywhere. "Nice bathroom," she said as she came out. Lennox nodded briefly, and it occurred to Nina, and would have occurred to her earlier, except she was so very tired, that of course Kate must have done it. Of course she must. The main room didn't look in the slightest like a farmhouse. It was all plain minimalist Scandinavian wood and floors. It didn't really suit Lennox, Nina thought, whose clothes, whilst clean, were so old and faded they looked as if he'd inherited them. He looked too big, too sharply cut for this decor. It was austere, yes, but so carefully designed to look austere, with its piles of artistic twigs and ironic antlers, that it actually ended up looking overdone. She looked for a bookshelf, but she didn't see one. Instead, there was a magazine basket, in white, of course, overflowing with copies of Farmers Weekly, and deep underneath all of those, a few old issues of Interiors magazine. She wondered if Lennox had kept them by mistake, or if he really didn't notice. She moved closer to the fire. Parsley was already ensconced in front of it, cozy and stretched out. Nina budged him up and sat next to him, staring into the flames. Lennox handed her a cup of tea, with, she soon discovered, coughing, whiskey in it.
"What's this?" she said.
"Hot toddy," said Lennox. "Warm ye up."
She took another sip and let the gentle, peaty warmth flood through her.
"Oh, yes," she said. "That is very nice."
"You look pleased with yourself."
She glanced up at him.
"I am pleased with myself," she said. "I saved those lambs, and now I'm lovely and cosy in front of a fire, drinking whiskey with a nice dog. I consider this to be a very good night."
She set the cup down. Lennox smiled broadly.
"Okay, fair enough," he said. "Don't fall asleep in front of the fire, though."
But it was too late. Nina's head had already nodded down onto her chest, and before she knew it, she was fast asleep.
"Well done tonight," Lennox added, but she didn't hear him.
Chapter 15 Nina ended up sleeping till nearly lunchtime in Lennox's house. She woke up on the modish cream-cord sofa, covered in a cream cashmere blanket, the sun streaming in through the windows, and at first she had absolutely no idea where she was. Gradually the night before came back to her, and although she still felt groggy, she realized she had to get up before Sarinda stomped out hollering her name. There was no sign of Lennox or Parsley. Nina wondered if they'd slept at all. She smiled a little, thinking of grumpy Lennox putting a blanket over her. Then she felt a bit embarrassed about it, too. One sip of whiskey, and she was out as if she'd been felled. Obviously not built for country living, he must be thinking. The sun beaming in so strongly through the window made it feel like she was somewhere hot, like Spain, until she opened the door and the cold wind rushed right through her, the clouds scudding across the sky as if they had somewhere more important to be. She smiled.
"Morning, Scotland," she said out loud.
She'd left her Wellingtons at the back door, and she put them on and crossed the yard, saying hello to the chickens pecking here and there, and wondering how her lambs were getting on. She also wondered if she'd be allowed to name them, until she remembered what they were for, what farms were for, and told herself off for being so naive and sentimental. At the door to the barn was a little basket. She bent down. It was full of eggs, still warm. Some of them had funny crumped shapes, not at all like you'd find in the shops. She smiled unconsciously and picked them up. Lennox must have left them. Sarinda was half dozing on the sofa, which felt like a bit of a waste of the lovely mezzanine bed, as well as the lovely day. Nina put the coffee on.
"Have you been out already?" said Sarinda sleepily. "This isn't like you. Normally on the weekends you need to get 3 hours reading in before you can even go to the corner shop for a packet of bacon."
Said Nina, "firstly, it's after 11, and secondly, actually, I didn't come home last night." Sarinda sat bolt upright.
"Tell me,"
she said. "You ran off to the train and caught up with it in Edinburgh."
Nina shook her head, pushed down the cafetiere, and cut some bread. She was completely and utterly ravenous.
"Scrambled eggs,"
she said happily, surprised she didn't feel more tired. "From the chooks in the farmyard?" Sarinda narrowed her eyes and looked at a particularly plump specimen who was marching up and down outside the picture window.
"You want me to eat something that just came out of that hen's butt?" she asked. "You eat eggs. You eat them all the time. But this one is warm, from a hen's butt. It doesn't come out of its butt. It comes out of its fufu," said Sarinda gloomily. "Man, that's even worse."
Nina burst out laughing.
"Seriously, you are so weird. Where do you think they made them? A cake shop?"
"No," said Sarinda.
"How about I take the shells off them," said Nina, "so they don't have any fufu stuff on them."
"Yes, do that."
Sarinda shut her eyes again.
"And don't make me watch you cook them."
Nina threw a couple of rashers of the local bacon into the frying pan. It smelled absolutely amazing. Put some bread into the expensive designer toaster, and finally brought two groaning plates of breakfast over to the scrubbed wooden table. Sarinda, forgetting her horror of fresh eggs, started burrowing into her plate.
"Oh, my God," she said suddenly, stopping. "What have I been eating all these years?"
Nina added some more creamy local milk to her coffee.
"What do you mean?" "These eggs, that bacon. I mean, this is awesome. You don't get this down the newsagents."
"Yeah," said Nina. She looked regretfully down at her plate. She'd been so furiously hungry, she'd basically inhaled breakfast without tasting it.
"Yes, it's good." "It's better than good. They'd charge about £1 million for it down the organic cafe. Is it all from round here?"
"Of course," said Nina. "This is what they do, round here."
Sarinda blinked at her.
"You know," she said faintly, "everyone thought you were a complete and utter lunatic for coming up here."
"You tell me that now," said Nina. "Really? Everyone? I thought everyone said I was awesome for being so brave and heading off and changing my life and all that."
Sarinda rolled her eyes.
"Yeah, well, they've got to say something. Remember when Kelly married that French bloke she met down the market?"
"Oh, yeah," said Nina.
"Yeah, we totally pretended we thought he was awesome."
"We did."
They chewed in silence for a moment.
"You know, he wasn't even really French," said Sarinda.
Nina grinned.
"Oh, God, I forgot about that bit."
Sarinda grabbed another piece of toast and waved her hand at the big windows.
"But now, look at this. I mean, I think you might actually be a genius."
"It's sunny today," said Nina, "but it's not sunny very often. Well, every 10 minutes. Then it rains, then it snows, then it hails, then it's sunny again."
"Stunning," said Sarinda.
"Now tell me what you did last night, under pain of death."
Nina smiled.
"I delivered 2 lambs. Well, I helped. No, I totally did it. With help."
And she explained.
"Oh, FFS," said Sarinda. "I knew it. Not a sniff of a bloke around you for 4 years. Then you move up here, and 5 seconds later it's Men's Central. I knew it!"
"So you went back to the farmhouse. Is the farm a hunky, by the way? In my head they've all got round red cheeks and Wellingtons and crooks and jolly expressions."
"You're thinking about a picture of a farmer in a children's book," said Nina.
"Oh, yeah," said Sarinda.
"Okay, surprise me. Top knot? Dreads? Sandals?"
"No," said Nina.
"No, you're right. Nothing like that. He's grumpy, getting a divorce. He's kind of tall and wiry and pointy-looking. Bit sad."
"Oh, right," said Sarinda.
She thought for a moment.
"Is he like that farmer in Babe?"
"No," said Nina. "You've got to stop thinking about farmers you've seen on television. He's a real bloke, young, who just happens to be a farmer."
"Well, he's not that much of a real bloke," said Sarinda.
"All the real blokes I know are obsessed with cars and have started doing cycling at the weekend and being really, really boring about it and banging on about their Fitbits and growing stupid beards and talking about being on Tinder. That's what all the real men are like these days." She lowered her voice.
"They're rubbish."
"You seem to like them."
Sarinda ignored this.
"Also, You fell asleep on his sofa, and he didn't even vaguely try it on with you. That doesn't sound much like the blokes I know either. She sighed. Right, what are we doing today? If it's unpacking books, you can sod off. I helped Marek pack them all up. Fine, said Nina. What I will totally not do is get on with work really, really loudly, giving big sighs every so often, whilst you recline on the sofa. I don't give a toss, said Sarinda. This is the most comfortable sofa I've ever sat on in my entire life. I don't think this is a sofa that gets advertised on television as costing very, very small amounts of money on bank holiday weekends. Neither do I, said Nina. I don't think this is a sofa that advertises at all. I think this is a sofa you have to beg to come and live with you in exchange for lots of money and blood sacrifice. And if the sofa doesn't think you're worth it, it won't bother, said Sarinda. It just keeps sitting in its palace. Whoops! Did you just spill coffee on it? Your furniture makes me really nervous. Me too, said Nina, looking around. Shall we head out? But I'm staying and lying on the sofa, said Sarinda. I took holiday for this. Nina didn't say anything, just put on her Wellingtons with a martyred expression, refilled her coffee cup, went out into the cool sunlight, and started work on the van. She'd managed to put up the shelves she'd ordered from Inverness. There were useful grooves in the walls for exactly that, without too much trouble, so she turned the radio up loud and went to work with a will, scrubbing down the walls and floors until it was utterly spotless, then starting on the happy task of dusting down the books and figuring out what went where. Fiction to the right, she decided, as you came in, seeing as that was what most people would be looking for, non-fiction to the left, and children's at the far end, so they could get right inside the van and up close. She had bought several cheap, colourful bean bags for the children to jump on for story hour. Her right to trade certificate was proudly displayed on the inside of the window. What had caused a lot of teeth-sucking and head-shaking in Birmingham had been granted with a ready smile up here. She sang along to the radio, making everything just so, and although it took all afternoon, it still didn't feel long before she was opening her very last box and gasping with surprise. It wasn't books at all, but all the little things she'd collected over the years to go with the books and show them off. She'd always wondered why she had picked up these bits and pieces of bric-a-brac, or junk, as Sarinda called them. But now, as she surveyed the clean, bare walls of the van, she realized exactly why she had been stockpiling all this time, without even knowing herself what she'd been doing. She strung garlands of fairy-like blossoms here and there, added funny bookends, a lighthouse, a gruffalo for the little ones, a set of huge cut-out bronze letters with light bulbs in them, spelling out books, which could be placed outside the van whenever she parked up on her rounds. Beautifully ornate notebooks she could use as book ledgers, framed Mother Goose prints to make an old-fashioned A to Z around the children's section, some bunting printed with pages of a vintage book. "This van is going to rattle like anything," observed Sarinda, slopping the tea a little as she crossed the farmyard, slightly wary of the chickens. "It won't," said Nina. "It's not going faster than 20 miles an hour, ever. I don't care who's behind me. They're just going to have to wait." She pulled out a tin of blue paint. "Okay," she said. "Something for you to do." "No," said Sarinda. "I'm still sleepy. I'll muck it up." "Then we'll paint over it," said Nina. "Come on. You're so good at it." Sarinda stuck out her bottom lip, but Nina knew how beautiful her handwriting was. She was always being prevailed upon to do people's wedding invitations. She moaned about it non-stop, but she always did it in the end. "Really? I'll make you breakfast again tomorrow," said Nina. "Wait till you taste the sausages they do round here." Sarinda groaned. "Seriously? Better than anything you've ever eaten in your life. Oh, and I think I have some local biscuits in." "What are they like?" "A surprise," said Nina, who hadn't tasted the round, red and silver-striped Tunnock's tea cakes herself. "You get started. I'll go and find them." Sarinda frowned. "You know, the last wedding I did, they gave me champagne and everything." "Biscuits and sausages," said Nina. "Basically, I'm spoiling you." She strode towards the barn. "Hang on," shouted Sarinda behind her. "What on earth is it called?" Nina turned round.
Oh, she said, I hadn't thought. Can you just put book bus?
No, said Sarinda. That sounds like a library.
Bookshop?
That sounds like a delivery van for books that are going